Sunday edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, March 31st, last day of March 2002. Stay with us.
Downtown when you're brown on a Friday night. Well, downtown plays Russian roulette with you, that's right. I said downtown when you're brown on a Friday night plays Russian roulette with you. But not with a second-hand Saturday night special, nah. Downtown plays Russian roulette with a brand new SJPD revolver. One bullet for injustice, one bullet for intolerance, and one bullet for the self-hating sellout Latino capuleto that will never bust enough Mexicans, harass enough Chicanos, or beat the shit out of enough Cholos to feel equal to his Caucasian counterparts. You see, downtown when you're brown, Officer Lopez is hunting down Chicanos like the Terminator, hoping in vain that one day he may be able to wake up and scrub the brown out of downtown, or at the very least, out of his own skin. Downtown! Downtown when you're brown, the muffled sound of injustice is drowned out by the boom, boom, boom of tricked out Impalas and cherried out mini trucks. As the cat calls of oppression are heard up and down Santa Clara streets, and beautiful Latinos strut 5 or 6 deep in midnight blue Buick Rivieras with gold smokes and silver crucifixes hanging from the mirror. Downtown when you're brown on a Friday night, all the signs say no cruising zone, but what they really mean is no fucking Mexican. Because SJPD will pull you over for being downtown and brown, and for no other reason. And you will find yourself on the corner of 27th and Santa Clara at a McDonald's parking lot, surrounded by 4 police cruisers, while 2 bigs in SWAT gear search your car illegally, and a 3rd one frisks you. And now I'm not talking about no pussy little frisk like you see in front of a club. I'm talking about a real motherfucking frisk like they do on cops, where they tell you to spread your legs, put your hands on the hood of the car, and they pat you down so good you think you're getting a hand job. And you know, if they don't find nothing on you, if they don't find nothing on you, for being brown in downtown. Someone's getting beat to a pulp by Billy Clubs in a back alley for being brown in downtown. Someone's getting shot for being brown in downtown. And everywhere, 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 Blessers going down for being brown in downtown.
And welcome again to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3, now in its 7th year and 1st day of illegal but very vital broadcasting to the Santa Cruz community here. We hope to continue 24 hours a day as we've done. We want your support. This is a very brief plug. We need your support. Everything we do comes from the wallets and the sweat energy of the folks in the collective here, and that's a small but determined band of folks, and we're not a closed band either. We're open to your input, and we're also open to your participation. If you give a call to 427-4523, that's the voicemail for Free Radio, 427-4523, that's the number to get more information. If you have a particular area of expertise or interest that you think is not being covered on Free Radio or on the media generally, Free Radio is eager to get new broadcasters and new supporters. 427-4523 is our Free Radio Santa Cruz voicemail. This show will be happening for the next 3.5 hours. It's a civil rights show, mostly concerned with local politics, but I am trying to kind of segment it so we can actually give folks a little advance warning as to what's coming on the air, and you can choose which part of the show, if any, to tune out or to tune in. The first hour, as my faithful programmer puts it, I should say my faithful producer puts it, I guess I'm the programmer and she's the producer at this point, she's put out an email that describes it as Unhoused America, in which we're going to be covering homeless issues and events from all over America, from Dignity Village in Portland, Oregon, to the Home Sweet Home camp in Isla Vista, California, all of whom will hopefully be coming together on May 3rd and 4th here in Santa Cruz for the, what I call the Sleeping Band Summit, but others have suggested calling the Homelessness Summit. I like it getting it rather specific because I think we want to focus on decriminalizing and action, not on theoretical discussions and broader problems, which have been talked to death, in my mind, by homeless services and folks who are well-funded with grants. And, for example, we'll be getting lots of endless blather at the Housing California Conference, which happens every April or May around this time. And they give homeless people these grants to come to this Sacramento conference, where 0.2% of the time is involved in discussing any kind of real homeless activism, and the rest goes to housing corporations and providers, each of their own little piece of the pie. Some of us call these folks poverty pimps. I'm sure some of them are very well intended, but it's massive amounts of money to go to middle class people and that don't really reach the poor people in any direct or meaningful amounts, and that's the problem with that kind of thing. And that's why I invite you folks to come to the May 3rd and 4th Sleeping Band Summit, as I call it, here in Santa Cruz. For more information, you can give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-H-U-F-F, or if you're out of the area, 831-423-4833. 831-423-4833. You'll catch a voicemail there. Just leave your name and number or any contact point. We'll get back to you. And there's also information about upcoming civil rights events that concern me and folks I'm working with in HUFF. HUFF meets every Wednesday. If you want to be a part of HUFF or just check out what it's doing, at Baker's Square Restaurant, 1107 Ocean Street in Santa Cruz. And it's at 8:30 in the morning every Wednesday. And if you can't afford the coffee, well, we will stake you to the coffee and fill you up with coffee and hopefully get you going, and we can all figure out what's happening in Santa Cruz that we need to address. And there's actually a lot happening. The most notorious and long-standing abuse, of course, being the Santa Cruz sleeping ban, the Municipal Code Section 6.36010A, which criminalizes sleeping outdoors from 11 to 8:30 in the morning for everybody who is unfortunate enough to be stuck outside or even in their own vehicle on all public property. The act of sleeping or covering up with a blanket at night is illegal after 11 o'clock. And results if an officer chooses to harass you in a $54 fine. So we've talked about this on the air before. We'll talk about it again until it's gone. And hopefully we'll go beyond talk at this summit. But as I said in the first part of the show, I'd like to kind of cover some topics that are broader than Santa Cruz, but that definitely relate to Santa Cruz, that involve the homeless struggles in other cities. And one of those cities, which I'm hoping will be coming to the summit, and I haven't reached them yet, I intend to give them a call tomorrow, is Las Vegas, where there's been a lot of action, at least in the media. I'm going to read a story from the Las Vegas Sun, March 26th, and then a longer story from the Las Vegas Weekly about what's been going on with the Las Vegas homeless. I mean, little blurbs have even made it into our own fish wrap, the Santa Cruz Sentinel, or the Sent Anal, as I like to call it, fondly. This is the paper that doesn't mind headlining. Well, they don't cover homeless issues. And when homeless, when we actually get together, for example, I was rather very frustrated when we got together a lawsuit for the first time in the decade and a half that I've been working on these issues here in Santa Cruz in federal court. to direct City Council to stop repressing homeless activists, which was filed May 26th. The Sentinel couldn't find that sufficiently newsworthy to even give it two sentences in the back. It was clearly an editorial decision. And Dan White, who covers the Santa Cruz City Council, who I spoke to on three occasions after it, though he kept assuring me that they were following the story, seems to me to be either he's made an editorial choice himself, which seems peculiar given his relatively long story, which covered the event 2 weeks before, which had to do with City Council harassing, silencing, evicting, and then arresting me for a very simple silent gesture which protested the cutting off of speakers at the oral communications mic, the only time the public really has the opportunity to bring up its own issues at City Council in the oral communications line. And since homelessness is never, I should say civil rights for the homeless is never on the agenda at City Council, that's the only place we can actually bring it up without being immediately ruled out of order and pressured to sit down and say nothing and stay at the back of the bus or off the bus or off to the side of the road or in another county or whatever, you know, however the police choose to be enforcing the rather draconian and sweeping laws at the moment. So, Las Vegas Sun. Let's hear a little bit from Las Vegas. A day after the city and metro police cleared out a 175-member homeless camp downtown, Las Vegas Mayor Oscar Goodman said Monday he hoped the ongoing pressure on the homeless population would either compel them to seek services or drive them out of the city. Either they're going to finally ask for help or they're going to get so frustrated they'll leave, Goodman said of the homeless. I'd prefer they ask for help. He added that the cleanup was in the best interest of residents because the camps in recent months had created health hazards around Four Master Lane and Main Street. But homeless advocates and officials who serve on a regional task force on homelessness said the operation, which cost nearly $11,000, merely served to underscore how far the Las Vegas Valley was from solving the homeless problem. Brother David Boer, a Franciscan friar who provides food and other services to the homeless at the Pavarello House, said the cost of the operation could have paid for 3 weeks of shelter at a section of the Salvation Army shelter that closed last September for lack of funds. The loss of beds and shelters around the city during the past year and metro sweeps of other areas. Are we still live? I think so. Thought we had a brief tremor there or something. Led to the swell of the homeless camp downtown, he said. It's too bad that taxpayer money had to be used for this when much of the problem could have been avoided if there was adequate shelter, he said. Others pointed to the new homeless camps that have risen only blocks away from the one that was dispersed on A Street between Washington and Owens Avenues and under a bridge on Owens west of the Salvation Army. How can the mayor keep saying there's enough beds and the problem is that we don't want them? If all these people are sleeping right next to a shelter, we couldn't get in, said Anthony Richards, one of about 60 men and women camped under the bridge Monday. Goodman is asking Metro and City Marshals, that's Mayor Goodman, to maintain a presence in the area to, quote, help the homeless. The mayor has insisted there are enough beds, though officials from MASH Village, the Las Vegas Rescue Mission, and the Salvation Army all said Monday their shelters have been full every night. We put our names on the list to get into the MASH tent, but in the end there was no space, Joshua and Rebecca, a couple who declined to give their last names, said Monday. They spent Sunday night under the bridge at Owens Avenue west of the Salvation Army. Brenda Deason, who heads the Shade Tree Shelter for Homeless Women and Children, said the shelter had 33 empty beds Sunday night, but she said she has run into only a handful of women from the sweep, with 10 new women entering the shelter Sunday. Another couple, Bernardo Segura and Dolores Barón, said they did not even seek a shelter bed because local shelters do not allow unmarried couples to stay together. If anyone wants a bed and is willing to abide by the rules, I'll make sure they have a bed, if that means going into my own pocket to get them a motel room, Mayor Goodman said Monday. Gary Peck, executive director of the Nevada American Civil Liberties Union, said city officials are lying when they say there is adequate shelter. Peck said homeless people wanting shelter are being turned away. The reason that city officials keep repeating the big lie that there is ample shelter space is because they understand that absent that shelter space or some other designated reasonable location within the city where people can go, the homeless have a right to be out there, he said. Tensions are mounting between law enforcement agencies and the ACLU, which says officers are violating the civil rights of homeless people. If the ACLU, the ACLU has argued that there is not that as long as there is not adequate shelter, homeless people cannot be arrested while engaging in, quote, life-sustaining activities, such as sleeping or eating. Only two homeless people were arrested during Sunday's sweeps. A couple were arrested early in the day near Washington Avenue and Veterans Drive on domestic violence charges after getting into a fight on the street. Alan Lichtenstein, legal counsel for the ACLU, said a Metro officer told him Monday that anyone sleeping on the sidewalk or in a group of more than three people would be arrested. Lichtenstein said this is clearly unconstitutional. The matter is likely headed to court, he said. This is an effort to disperse the homeless and drive them out. Peck said. The rising tension in the area is not going unnoticed by those who run the shelters. What's happening in the next week or so is critical, Ruth Bruland, executive director of MASH Village, said. If the community slides into thinking, oh, we took care of those guys, it's not true. We didn't take care of those guys, she said. We took care of a situation, she said, but we need to change the way we're doing things. Those changes may be months off. The Southern Nevada Regional Planning Coalition is scheduled in April to discuss a five-point plan its homelessness task force has devised for addressing the issue. The plan must then be approved by the cities of Henderson, North Las Vegas, and Las Vegas, as well as Clark County. North Las Vegas Councilwoman Stephanie Smith, a task force member, said recent events only serve to show how much a regional approach to solving the problem is needed. At least 5 years ago, I felt as if we were losing track of the bigger picture and pouring millions into building shelters in downtown Las Vegas without having asked fundamental questions like, do we know how many homeless there are? Do we know exactly what their needs are? Do we want all the shelters to be grouped in one place? Now the time has come to ask those questions. Actually, the time has come to give the answers. And I'm also a little uncomfortable with the ACLU position that as long as there's a shelter, it's okay to drive people away off the streets. There's a thing called the right of public assembly for poor people, provided they're not engaging in real criminal behavior. And I don't think sleep is criminal behavior. So I think people have the right to make certain choices here, provided they're not obstructing the sidewalk or crapping on your car or things of that sort. That was from the Las Vegas Sun, and the article was March 26th. I actually read that article last show, but for those of you who didn't catch it, you got to hear it again. There's a longer article, however, about Las Vegas that's interesting, and Las Vegas has been getting a lot of attention. I've been kind of collecting stories from Las Vegas. You can do it on the internet by going to Google and rolling into the Las Vegas Sun and the Las Vegas Record and the various Las Vegas papers. Kind of interesting. What I really want to do, though, is get the ACLU's perspective. And again, as I said, I hope to invite them to our May 3rd and 4th Sleeping Band Summit. And I also hope to maybe get some Las Vegas homeless folks come to town to talk about it and hopefully to organize. And again, my focus at this summit is I want to see us do something here in Santa Cruz that deals with our situation and mobilizes folks from other cities in their way to help us, and hopefully we can also help them. This has periodically been tried at a state level, homeless civil rights organizations. The last such attempt was California Homeless Civil Rights Organizing Project last year, which sort of has collapsed in confusion, mainly because the main organizations covering it seem to be more interested in getting grant money or pursuing a rather elaborate process that didn't really involve action, but involved devising a form and having meetings, and many, many meetings. But I think we can do something if we are committed to doing something. And that's what this summit is all about, and I'm optimistic about it, and a lot of other folks are too. And if you want more information, give a call to 423-HUFF, 831-423-4833 for more info. Las Vegas. Here's a story. The Uphill Battle for Free Speech in Las Vegas by Joe Schinneman, Las Vegas Weekly. Two Las Vegas police officers wrenched Chris Burnett's arms high behind his head to the point that he thought his thin bones would snap. A crowd of tourists gathered. What did he do? Someone whispered. Within seconds, several tourists turned from the free pirate show at Treasure Island and watched as Las Vegas' finest slapped cuffs on the 19-year-old. You better stop yapping or you're going to be charged with inciting a riot, one of the officers whispered in Burnett's ear. I didn't do anything wrong, the 19-year-old replied, only to feel his arms shoved closer to the breaking point. But he had. By walking up and down the strip on the 4th of July with signs protesting corporate America, Burnett violated the decades-old unwritten law of Clark County. Freely express yourself, just don't do it in public, especially not in front of a strip casino. That can land you in jail. That's just the way it is, how it has always been. Casinos rule. Little people are to be seen, not heard. It was just 4 years ago, for instance, that a group trying to collect signatures in support of medical marijuana on the Fremont Street Experience were, quote, detained by Las Vegas police, who threatened them with arrest if they ever returned. That same year, a group of five men handing out religious pamphlets on Fremont Street were arrested by police, strip-searched, and thrown in jail for up to 48 hours. Their charge? Blocking the sidewalk. All charges were later dismissed, and the list goes on. Animal rights activists were dealt with brutally by police this summer when they attempted to protest a meeting of a large corporation in a strip hotel, and members of the Shundahai Network, a group opposed to nuclear weapons testing, were harassed on Fremont Street. Just a few weeks after Burnett was tackled and handcuffed, a group of homeless advocates first marched in front of the MGM Grand, then moved to the Fremont Street Experience. Each time they were met with defiant security guards who wanted to push them away, and cops who were unsure about what to do. But no one was ever arrested or charged. The American Civil Liberties Union of Nevada thinks that's significant. They also believe it's the result of three major court rulings this year that gives protesters a new lease on free speech on the streets of Las Vegas. One of them dealt with the leafleting on the Fremont Street Experience, and another with handbilling on the Strip. But the decidedly biggest boost to free speech advocates came from a federal court decision July 12th on a case involving the Venetian Hotel Casino and its owner, Sheldon Adelson. And I'm... Taken together, you might wonder if Clark County is in the midst of a kind of free speech renaissance, or is this, too, just more Vegas sleight of hand? Maybe Alan Dershowitz knows, arguably one of the most famous attorneys in the country. He became part of the Venetian lawsuit 3 weeks ago. Though a federal court ruled against the Venetian in July, the casino filed a petition for a rehearing a few weeks ago. But before filing this in the too-good-to-be-true box, understand one thing. Dershowitz, a Harvard Law School professor and former ACLU National Board member, whose name is virtually synonymous with the First Amendment, isn't siding with the ACLU. He's been hired by Sheldon Adelson to defend his right to kick picketers and protesters along with any other Tom, Dick, or Jane off his sidewalk. Still think we're on the verge of a renaissance? That seems to fit in with Dershowitz's recent justifications of torture and his suggestion that there be torture warrants for the CIA and other agencies. It's a little addition from your host here. Continuing this article from the LA Weekly, a rude awakening. When the mob ran Vegas, it was their way or the highway or a hastily dug shallow grave in the desert. When they told picketers to move off the sidewalk, picketers moved. Not that many folks would be daring enough to protest a mob-run casino. More recently, though, insolent protesters on the steps of the casino would have been dealt with swiftly, if not physically, by corporate hired goons and Las Vegas police. But this is 2001, and times may just be a-changing. Case in point. 3 weeks ago, a group of the homeless and their advocates who called on casinos to do their fair share for Las Vegas were ready for a different kind of battle. They marched and chanted with signs in front of the MGM. And by the way, this story was dated March 31st, 2002, today, so I'm not sure why it's dated back as we read it. As soon as the MGM security guards and Las Vegas police told them to move, ACLU attorney Alan Lichtenstein showed up with some heavy ammo, a July ruling by the 9th U.S. District Court of Appeals in San Francisco that made it very clear that even sidewalks owned by casinos are fair game for free speech. Take that, yuppie planter. In other words, according to the federal court, Venetian owner Sheldon Adelson is not, in fact, God, and he cannot prevent people from protesting on his sidewalk. Chest deflated, biceps relaxed, the MGM security guard's attorney and a vice president took the hint and left the marchers alone. The outcome would have been completely different, noted Gary Peck, ACLU executive director, if the federal court had done what most Nevada courts do and sided with the casino. The issues involved are profound, said Peck. It revolved around the whole issue of whether or not the Venetian sidewalks can be removed as a public forum and the First Amendment get banned. I guess they should get some advice from the city council on how to wall off the sidewalk and sell it to the casinos. That might work, just like they've done in front of New Leaf Market here in Santa Cruz with Sushi Now and Alibaba's Cafe in the former Community Planter area. Casino warlord gets mad. None of this might have happened had it not been for Adelson's refusal to hire union workers for his shiny new casino back in 1999. In response, some 1,300 culinary union workers got a permit and marched in front of Adelson's casino. It was organized chaos. Police stood in the 100-degree heat, sweating and trying to figure out what to do as Adelson's security people tried to pressure them into hauling the protesters off to jail. Concrete barriers were placed in the street just in case police agreed with the Venetian. But this was one of those rare moments when police didn't side with casino security. They let the marchers march. News crews taped and wrote about it, and hundreds of passing cars honked horns in allegiance with the workers. Infuriated, Adelson sued, naming District Attorney Stuart Bell, the police department, and the Culinary Union as co-defendants. The ACLU of Nevada was not named, but they've been the only legal team willing to take the case on behalf of the public. Not even D.A. Bell was willing to face off with the great and powerful Venetian. In fact, Bell's office hasn't said one word about the case, refusing in court to argue on behalf of the marchers or against the Venetian. The DA's office, supported by millions of taxpayer dollars, is officially on record that it doesn't care about free speech rights when it comes to sidewalks in front of Adelson's Venetian. And of course, this is true also in Santa Cruz, where Kate Canlis's DA's office, and now Bob Lee's DA's office, come November, has done nothing about the harassment of people at city council or the seizure of the public sidewalks here in front of the New Leaf and the arrest of activists like myself for setting up a petitioning table, as happened 2 months ago. Those attorneys who are supposed to represent the general public have been an embarrassment, said Peck. In court, Adelson's attorneys argue that the casino owner can do whatever he wants with the sidewalk or the people who use it because it's his. He owns it. And in Santa Cruz, as I understand it, though we have a access to the sidewalks and a right of passage there and a right to use the sidewalks are actually owned by the businesses. And actually the businesses are responsible for cleaning the sidewalks, and they're also responsible for and liable for accidents that happen on the sidewalks, so repairing and maintaining the sidewalks. And I got that from Chamber of Commerce former CEO Michael Schmidt. Also, he was a candidate in the Board of Supervisors race here recently. So we have a similar situation to Las Vegas. Continuing this article, Peck and Lichtenstein still recall with astonishment Adelson attorney Walter Dellinger III's answer when a judge asked if the Venetian had the right to force anyone, short people, men with mullets, poorly dressed tourists, limpers, and women off the sidewalk. Barely pausing to consider, Dellinger answered yes. Dellinger did not return a call for comment, but William Coleman, one of Dellinger's law partners who is also working on the Venetian case, agrees entirely with Dellinger's line of thought. Well, I mean, you can do that, Coleman replied when asked if the Venetian has the right to toss, say, a midget into the street. That doesn't mean there aren't other statutes, and you may have other statutes that say a private person can't treat a midget in a way different from the way you treat a non-midget. The big guy falls. Sheldon Adelson can pretty much buy anything he wants in Las Vegas. Thankfully, the Ninth Circuit Court is in San Francisco, and last month that court nearly dealt him a knockout blow when it ruled against him. Property that is dedicated to public use is no longer truly private, the court wrote. By dedicating the property to public use, the owner is given over to the state, or to the public, generally, one of the most essential sticks in the bundle of rights that are commonly characterized as, properly, the right to exclude others. Coleman says he can't understand the court's ruling, restating his position that the sidewalk is private property. Lichtenstein and Peck shake their heads at Coleman's tired argument, saying that if the Venetian gets its way, the courts would be literally giving businesses the right to ignore the First Amendment so long as they had the money to purchase that right. You'd basically have a situation where the government would have the right to deed away free speech on public sidewalks, says Peck. Does this sound familiar, Santa Cruz? And you'd have virtually thousands of public sidewalks that are no longer a public forum. Bad Fremont Street experiences. Peck, who holds a law degree from Stanford and is a former sociology professor with a PhD from the University of North Carolina, points to two other major court decisions as a sign that the bad old days are fading away. One stemmed from a 1997 lawsuit filed by the ACLU against the Fremont Street Experience and city ordinances that allowed the Experience, a $70 million project built with $27 million from taxpayers, to ban leafleting and other forms of political speech on the street. 3 years after the suit was filed, U.S. District Judge David Hagan issued an injunction that banned police and security guards from harassing people engaging in political speech. Did that change anything? A month later, four people collecting signatures for legalizing medical marijuana were detained and threatened by police. Then a few months later, the five men with religious materials were arrested. In October 1999, police and security guards on the Fremont Street Experience stopped a group from handing out pamphlets alleging police brutality. A month later, the same security guards refused to let members of the Shundahai Network, an anti-nuclear testing group, pass out leaflets asking people to join us, saying that the phrase constituted solicitation, which is not allowed. With the injunction apparently not clear enough for the Fremont Street Experience guards and attorneys to understand, the federal judge solidified his ruling in April of 2001. As a sort of test, the homeless advocates, all 10 or so of them, marched on the street 3 weeks ago. And guess what? They were all promptly met and detained by security guards and Las Vegas police, this must have been last year, until Peck and Lichtenstein came and educated them about the law. Police officers on the scene said that when they called the city attorney's office for advice, the attorneys there refused to offer any. Well, I guess that's a step up from our city attorney, who sent out somebody to help Officer or Sergeant Baker stake out myself and Zoe Einbinder when we were petitioning for keeping the sidewalks public, and private store owner Matisse Selman of Sushi Now had us arrested on citizens' complaint. Not only did Baker surveil us on police money with videotapes, but the city attorney's office apparently was called in to render an opinion as to whether we could be prosecuted. He said we could, but of course after we were arrested, all the charges were dropped after we'd been jailed and harassed, as apparently is happening systematically, or was happening until this federal court decision in Las Vegas. Lichtenstein, a former communications professor, who later received a cranky letter from the Fremont Street Experience attorney accusing the ACLU of engaging in unethical behavior because instead of going through Fremont Street Experience attorneys, Lichtenstein addressed security guards directly. Some things in Vegas will never change. It's only a mirage. Aside from the Venetian and Fremont Street Experience rulings, Peck and Lichtenstein point to another of their cases involving the Mirage as proof that times are in fact changing. The suit filed by the Mirage sought to restrict the distribution of sexually explicit handbills on sidewalks next to the Mirage and Treasure Island, both of which were controlled by Steve Wynn when the suit was filed in 1999. It's essentially the same argument made by Sheldon Adelson, that since the sidewalk is private, a casino can restrict whatever it wants. And in May of 2001, the Nevada Supreme Court ruled 5-1 with the Mirage that businesses cannot distribute handbills on the Mirage's sidewalk. But the ACLU considers the ruling a victory because only three judges, Cliff Young, Deborah Agosti, and Nancy Becker, argued that the sidewalks were not a public forum. The other two, voting against the ACLU, Chief Justice Bill Maupin and Miriam Shearing, agreed with the ACLU that the sidewalks were a public forum. They just didn't like the fact that the handbills were of a commercial nature. And finally, Justice Bob Rose voted against the Mirage, saying without question the sidewalks were public forums. The Seventh Justice, Myron Levitt, recused himself from the case. So the way Lichtenstein and Peck see it, the vote was split, 3-4 and 3 against free speech on privately owned sidewalks that are used as main thoroughfares. The 9th U.S. District Court in July ruled against the Venetian and only solidified their point. Long way to go. The Nevadans are still fighting for their right to freely express themselves in public. It might seem odd to outsiders, but both Peck and Lichtenstein insist that despite the financial ability of businessmen like Sheldon Adelson to keep a losing lawsuit alive for years, the First Amendment and other liberties are in much better shape here than they were just 5 years ago. 4 or 5 years ago, they would pass laws in Nevada abridging constitutional rights with impunity, said Lichtenstein. Now they think far more about it because they know they're going to have to defend themselves in court, especially federal court. If we were not here, Peck adds, a lot of people would be silenced. Case in point, Chris Burnett. On Wednesday, 5 weeks after Burnett was cited for obstructing justice because he held a sign in front of his face to prevent police from snapping his picture, Lichtenstein and attorney Joan L. Thomas, who was on the ACO board, appeared in Burnett's behalf in justice court. When they got there, none of the harassing officers were there. Neither were any of the Clark County prosecutors. The charge had been dismissed. And even though this segment is concerned with news beyond Santa Cruz, and I like to link it up to our little city here, charges against Zoe Einbinder for displaying her jewelry, the three charges by Officer Poulter, CSO Poulter, that initially sent Zoe to a Huff meeting about 2.5 months ago, were dismissed on motion from the district attorney's office in the interest of justice on Friday in court after Zoe had demanded a trial before a judge. And one of the public defenders I spoke to said that the reason that motion came was because he thought Zoe was fighting back. So this is a lesson for everyone. I think Las Vegas is the lesson. Santa Cruz is the lesson. Fight back, and you've got more chance of winning. Surrender, and you're doomed from the start. Of course, obviously, circumstances must determine which battles you want to fight, and that has to be taken case by case. But I think it's often true, and I think it's certainly true here in Santa Cruz, that the more we stand up and unite and take on a case-by-case basis using the necessity defense and constitutional free speech and freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, and also state constitutional arguments about the right to security, which is in the state California Constitution, the more likely we are, A, to win a ruling at a higher court somewhere along the line, and B, simply to convince the legislators and the prosecutors and the police that it's not worth their time and money and the community's censure, because you're going after poor people who have no real choices, to continue to harass people for the crime of sleeping or covering up with a blanket or even, God forbid, setting up a tent against the rain and trying to do some cooking in a certain area, setting up a campground, in other words, because the city is refusing to set up campgrounds and because the city is refusing to deal with issues of rent control and the homeless problem generally. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. For those who want to call in, our lines are open, 831-427-3772, 427-3772. And I encourage you to give us a call. The lines are definitely open and waiting for you to call us up. So, do.
I'm a person from where you call lower class, Samoan American, Frisco City, stay away, drug zone. Damn, no money, no food, going to a fucked up school, poverty, that's what I'm living. Red cheeks, black eye, you abusing me? Fuck, I can't even live like this, but it's poverty, that's what I'm living, poverty.
Pain, dig, pain. This poet here must really like pain. Pain which drips into my being from birth with words like karma and samsara and quotes like, we're born alone, we live alone, we sure as shit are gonna die alone. Dig, I live alone. I live in a cheap SRO hotel. One bed, one desk, one sink. Stained green carpet is covered with words. Stained green carpet is covered with anger, hatred, violence. One wall is covered in art. The Pieta, mother holds son. I swear I seen that scene played out last night on them blood-soaked sidewalks. Mother holds dead soldier son after gang war claimed another. Rest in peace, essay. It ain't enough to hide the ugliness that I call home. You see, I am a Chicano poet with a cause. Outside my door, ex-covered dope dealers are walking tall with pocket filled with rock, like so much spare change in $20 bills. He sits crouched down, smoking a blunt, drinking a beer, and he's blaming everything on the white man. As crackheads scurry from shadow to shadow, only long enough to hit that pipe and hear it sing her sweet song and dig. It's through this pain that I find inspiration. Through this pain, I find poetry, running, hiding, past hookers with vacant eyes, past Fatos locals standing out there on 24th Street with their mission buddies, showing the day's new tattoos. You know what I mean? Like Jesus, Mary, or Rose, a portrait of Che, Aztec warrior, or a simple Pachuco cross between the first finger and thumb. It's mi barrio, homes. Por la vida. Simón. Another beer is open, another sign is flashing. As I move down past these used rigs, I wish I could line them up. I said, I wish I could line them all up, because they would spell out, heroin tells no lies. And if you don't believe me, all you got to do is ask the woman next door, whose child was just wheeled out this afternoon. She had on fresh makeup, and they didn't even take that blood clotted syringe. They were cold, dead, blue arm, yeah. For me, poetry hides everywhere, like smashed out bus stop glass windows, which litter the sidewalks, like the ones I saw you cry the day you left me at some out of the way El Centro bus stop, and you told me that you loved me, and that's why you did it. And dig, I'm alone, and my pockets are empty, and the only darkness I know is, comes well before the light, and the only green I know is a long shot between a cue ball and an eight, and that ain't for sure. And blackness ain't darkness like the darkest hour before the dawn when night closes in. And there ain't no more smokes. And one drink would be great. But 100 might put my sorry ass to sleep tonight down these mission streets, which are empty, which are quiet, which are real quiet, which are soon broken with the scream and dig. I got goosebumps and I'm digging it all because I'm thinking about you. I'm thinking about your pain with crack cocaine, your pain with abuse, your pain with sexual abuse, your pain with alcohol, your pain with heroin. I'm thinking about it all, you see, but dreams here and my mission are just too damn short.
Brothers who's never seen home.
I lay dreaming of pleasant days gone by. Me mind being bent on rambling to Ireland I did fly. I stepped on board a vision, I followed it with a will, and I shortly came to anchor at the cross of Spencer Hill. Delighted by the novelty, enchanted by the sea, where in my early boyhood often I had been, I thought I heard a murmur, I think I hear it still. It's the little stream of water that flows down Spencer Hill to amuse a passing fancy. I lay down on the ground, and all my school companions, they quickly gathered round. As we were home returning, we danced with bright goodwill to Martin Moylan's music at the cross on Spencer Hill. To see my neighbors, to hear what they might say. The old ones were all dead and gone, the young ones worn and gray. I spoke with the tailor quickly, he's bold as ever still. Sure, he used to make my breeches when I lived on Spencer Hill. I paid a flying visit to my first and only love. She's bright as any lily and gentle as a dove. She threw her arms around me saying, Johnny, I love you still. Oh, she's Mac, the ranger's daughter, and the pride of Spencer. Oh, I dreamt I stooped and kissed her, as in the days of yore. She said, Johnny, you're only joking, as many's the time before. The rooster crowed in the morning, he crowed both loud and shrill, and I awoke California, many miles from Spencer Hill.
Wow. Hard to see the board this morning. I guess we got some new labels here. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pier Robert Norse. This is Bathrobes Pier's Broadsides. And in case you want to call in to discuss anything you've been hearing, 427-3772. 427-FRSC is the phone number to call. So continuing with the kind of national, statewide focus where we cover what's happening in different areas, one of the groups coming to the Homeless Summit or the Sleeping Band Summit on May 3rd and 4th here in Santa Cruz is going to be Dignity Village, and I've gotten a very encouraging email which says that they actually intend to bring down 20 people. That'd be quite something. Like to see that happen. And maybe it will. Maybe even some folks from Eugene and Seattle, who knows, to talk about setting up an encampment, setting up a village, setting up a self-sustaining homeless experiment, which essentially is a form of alternate housing and is a form of security and protection and, in a way, a road out of homelessness for folks who are homeless and also a way to survive while homeless in a fashion that it has more dignity, has more safety, and has more opportunity than sleeping in an isolated back alley somewhere alone, risking violence, risking illness and death in circumstances where you're cut off from community links. And that, of course, is why here in Santa Cruz we had Camp Paradise.